Good afternoon. We're here with another episode of the Sean Mo Hoops Pod after a two-week hiatus. Today is the day of the NBA draft, and I'm pleased to have with me Michael Weisenberg, a frequent guest, but NBA draft specialist. And he's been on the podcast many times talking about college basketball and a lot of the one-and-done freshmen and soon-to-be NBA players. And we've always alluded to doing a draft podcast, but now at the last minute, we're finally doing a short one. So, Mike, how are you doing today?
Doing very well, Sean. Been looking forward to this for a while and really glad that we're doing it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of your Christmas, isn't it?
Absolutely, man. It's one of the best days of the year for me, for sure.
Well, I mean, I think for this year, there's going to be hopefully a lot of surprises. I think things have been changing in the mock drafts left and right, and we all know that for the most part, crazy things will happen right up until 7:30 Eastern. So, you know, what you're seeing on the mock draft now will be nowhere near what it may be come 7:30 once all the rumors have flown by and things are starting to get a little more settled. But as we know also, once the draft gets going, after you get outside of, you know, that first 5 or 10, crazy things can happen very quickly. So first things first, you had an article on NBADraft.net, which you've done since 2013, where you do your top five lists of going through a lot of different categories and different players. So why don't you just kind of walk me through what this list is and kind of your thought process when you were writing it?
So I have been doing this list for a while, and it was even being done before I started writing for NBADraft.net, and just always a fun piece. And you just kind of go over the superlatives of, like, you know, the best, the most athletic, the strongest, the fastest, the most explosive for backcourt, frontcourt, so on and so forth. I put in the Jason Maxfield Award, which was the difference between your height without shoes and your wingspan, which went to Mohamed Bamba, no surprise this year. And I think next year it might be changed to the Mohamed Bamba Award because he was actually longer than even Jason Maxfield. But yeah, it's just a really fun piece and a good thing to debate. Like, you know, that's what I hope to bring about as well. And I highlight some of the top players. I also take into account, like, just how functional it is in a game. So that's another aspect of it. So if you're just going by the athletic combine numbers and everything like that, some of the top prospects don't compete in that. And I know a top athlete I had, like, a couple years ago was Ben Simmons, and it seems like he's been pretty functionally athletic in the NBA. So I'm pretty happy with that choice, and my choice this year was Marvin Bagley, who I just feel has a ridiculous amount of athleticism at his size and as far as speed, quickness off the floor, and the fact that he gets his head around the rim, like, pretty much more often than just about anybody you see in the game right now.
Yeah, so you have Marvin Bagley as most athletic and then DeAndre Ayton as the strongest player. And, you know, I think for both of these guys, they've really been, from the time people first started hearing about them when they, you know, really before they entered high school, but really from that point, both of these guys were assumed to be the number one picks in their draft class. And then last summer, Marvin Bagley reclassed so that he's in the same class as DeAndre Ayton. And I know the two, they played for maybe a few weeks, maybe a few months at prep school in Arizona a few years ago. But what do you think are the biggest differences when comparing these two players that could easily go number one and number two in the draft?
I think Ayton's, not only Ayton's strength, like I think he still is about like 20 to 25 pounds heavier than Marvin Bagley. And he's a little older, but again, I don't think like enough to make up for that. He's about 4 or 5 inches longer in terms of wingspan, and I'm guessing about 3 or so inches more in standing reach. So you have that aspect, and I just feel like there's a chance where And Ayton, I think his shot is a little bit more real than Marvin Bagley's shot. And I know Marvin Bagley actually shot pretty well from NCAA three-point range, but he still at times struggled as a free-throw shooter and isn't the most consistent shooter. Whereas DeAndre Ayton, that's always been an aspect that people have been very content with his game, where, you know, he sometimes will kind of like fall out to the perimeter a little more than you would want, but then he showed such a great ability to score in the post also. So yeah, just from a physical specimen standpoint, Ayton is pretty darn special.
Yeah, I would agree. I was actually just going back and looking the first time I saw him, he saw him in person. He was a sophomore playing in the City of Palms. Actually, he was playing against Udoka Azubuki, so that was a pretty good game. And it was one of like the signature series games. I remember not a lot of people were there, but in that game, Ayton had 23 points and 20 rebounds. And you know, you could basically watch the game for 10 seconds and just look at him and say, "Yep, that guy's going to be the top pick." Because at that point, he was just, you know, tall but really athletic and even though he was kind of a slight of build, you could tell he was strong and just how graceful he was when he ran the floor. At the time he hit a three, I think he missed a few others, but even at that time, the range was there and he's been able to kind of fine tune his outside shot. But, you know, he's one of the ones that has just kind of been there from the beginning and, you know, went through some kind of ups and downs of how hard he was playing, but really turned that around once he got into Arizona, added a lot of muscle mass, and you know, has been playing like the number one pick. Although I know during the year a lot of people were talking about Luka Doncic, which we'll get to. But regarding Marvin Bagley, you brought up his shot, and that's something I've been high on him since first seeing him at USA camp. But I know he shot the ball, as you mentioned, pretty well during the school year. But that was something he really didn't do in the AAU circuit at all, or kind of when watching him in some of the summer leagues. So that's really one, and you hit on it, kind of the main area I'm looking forward to see how that translates. I think the form is there, but I still think, especially next year, he'll struggle from that point, and that'll be the difference between him being, you know, a really, really great player and kind of a, you know, just a good player.
Mm-hmm. And I think also in terms of defense, like that's where the length factors in a little bit as well. Like they both have issues. They're both not great rim protectors, though. Ayton definitely had a higher block rate than Bagley. And they were both kind of, you know, put in that power forward slot because they were playing next to centers. And with Bagley, I think it's just positioning sometimes at Duke, and you can blame that on the zone and, like, you know, all the other factors, and I know you, Sean, particularly do, but the few games where he didn't play, where they played a little bit better, and you know, I think some people just worried about that. And then with Ayton, it's in terms of help defense, like he sometimes just seemed kind of clueless about angles and, you know, when to move over and help his teammates. Like if, you know, he was in spots to do so. So yeah, that's like a really interesting factor, especially since both of those guys are big men. And I guess it's something that teams must feel enough confidence in to work on with both of those prospects, because it looks like they're going 1-2.
Well, so say they go 1-2, you know, what are your thoughts on Luka, and where does he fall, and then how does he translate to the NBA game?
Well, Luka is a guy I'm very high on as well, and it's not like I'm alone. I think his basketball IQ is like well above anybody in this draft. And I know Trae Young, like, led the NCAA in assists and great shooter, everything too. And sometimes you get people like debating between those two players, because he's a better shooter than Luka, I think Luka maybe has a better understanding of the game. Trae Young could turn the ball over quite often and actually had a really high, just not a great assist to turnover ratio in terms of, you know, I think he was like, it's something like 9.7 to 5.9. And Luka over EuroLeague and ACB was over 2-1. And he is a fantastic passer. He just seems to have a great feel for the game. It seems like he can make shots in a bevy of ways, gets to the foul line very often. And not only that, like, even in terms of, like, physically, he's, like, seems to be, if he's not 6'8", he's close. He's about 230 pounds. He can handle the ball. He's going to be a guy who can just do quite a bit on the floor, even if he's not necessarily, like, even if the shooting doesn't translate, like, right away. But there's definite reason to be confident that he'll become a pretty good shooter as well. Was always over an 80% foul shooter. And I was just going back and looking at some of his numbers from when he was playing in the European championships last summer. And just really impressive, like, you know, even like shooting off the dribble, shooting off the catch. There's not a lot they can't really do as a basketball player. And it seems like he even has like he may not be the greatest on-ball defender, but it seems like he has at least a good concept of positioning. And as my friend Eric would point out, he's another writer for NBADraft.net. He has great hands. And I think it seems like he's a pretty polarizing prospect, but the majority of people, I think, see him as at least being a solid NBA player and potentially even more than that and an all-star. And yeah, he could be a great person, a position of need. It's like the point forward spot.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, to what he's done during the course of the year from an international standpoint, obviously is unprecedented. But, to be winning on every single stage at such a young age and going against players, not NBA level, but those that have maybe had a cup of tea in the NBA or, you know, ones that were very good in college and to be getting the MVPs, very talented passer. You have him as the best passer, and I think that's a no-brainer. And I feel like over the past few years, there's always been one kind of clear-cut passer that's stood out from the rest, from Lonzo Ball last year to I'm going to go Ben Simmons prior to that and mm-hmm. Tyler Ulis before that as kind of the best passers in college going into the NBA. But yeah, I think the athleticism is the question mark, and I've been trying to, I know he tested at P3 up in Santa Barbara, and I've been trying to get access to some of that data, but unfortunately have not had any success. But yeah, I think, you know, the fallback is he's a 6'8 point guard and he's a great passer. So I think that the downside is pretty minimal, but, you know, will he reach that upper tier status that you kind of, you know, think one might make at the top three. But one player, and we'll skip over some of the bigs for a minute, but one player I want to get your opinion on, since I know you got to watch him go up against Marvin Bagley in high school as well as a few other times, is Michael Porter Jr., the talented mm-hmm. 6'10 shooter that really people in college basketball didn't get to see much of. He sat out pretty much the majority of the year with a back injury and came back for what was it, two games at the end of the SEC and NCAA tournament, and was pretty uninspiring. Right now, ESPN has him going number 7 in their draft, and NBA draft one. Hold on 1 second. They have him. Yeah. Oh wow, they have him going number 5 to Dallas. So, what are your thoughts on Michael for those that didn't get to see him a lot in college?
Well, I still have him pretty high on my personal, like, big board. I made a top 10 the other day, and I had him number 6. because I still believe that, you know, he has a chance to be a very good scorer in the NBA. And, you know, certainly has a good mind for the game too. A beautiful looking shot. And then, you know, the fact that he could possibly play the three or the four. I always thought he moved his feet pretty well as a perimeter defender too. The thing I felt he most needed to work on was his handle. And we never really got a chance to see that in college. And he came back for those two college games and looked kind of like a just fraction of himself. And you kind of have to worry about that. I think a lot of people who haven't seen him were just, you know, pretty low on him after seeing what happened when he came back. It just didn't seem like he had that same pop and athleticism, because when I saw him play Marvin Bagley, he was like head at the rim, kind of doing that as well. I think Marvin was definitely stronger, maybe a little bit quicker, but the athleticism difference there wasn't huge. I just couldn't put him on my athleticism list after what I saw when he came back. But if he does recapture that, then he absolutely could be one of the better players in this draft. He measured like a shade under 6'11", and great shooter. Just always seemed to have like a good pedigree, and just a very confident player. Always very aggressive. Kind of like had that alpha male thing going on, and it's just seems like as much as you have to be cautiously optimistic if you draft Michael Porter.
Yeah, great shooter, you know, perfect form, beautiful shot. He's one of those guys that really uses his lower body a lot to get a real high lift on his shot. As you mentioned, his ball handling, I think that's the big concern of really being able to create for himself. I know he can, you know, kind of one dribble, two dribble and pull up, and it's hard to block his shot, but does he kind of have that creative ability, you know, to be in the pick and roll and really, you know, get by somebody, I think is a question mark. But yeah, if you're 6'10 and can shoot like that, obviously the ceiling is high, but that's my concern with him is his shot creation.
I totally agree.
All right. So, we could go back and forth on all these prospects. So why don't we, I'm going to give you the first pick, and we'll just go back and forth through the top. We'll do the top 15 and just kind of, you know, I want to hear who you take and kind of the reason why, and we'll just go back and forth.
So this is who we take as opposed to who we feel is going to be taken.
Yep.
Let's do this.
All right. With the number one pick, you're up on the clock.
This is a pretty tough selection for me, and I absolutely see the merit in taking a Luka Doncic. I think his coach from Slovenia, Igor Kokoskov, being there, I thought the Suns might be angling towards that. But I also see the huge upside in DeAndre Ayton. I think it also addresses like a position of need, but the talent is there as well, where he could just be a great NBA player. So I paired DeAndre Ayton with Devin Booker and draft him for the Phoenix Suns.
All right, that's not a bad pairing. And I'm gonna stay in order and go Marvin Bagley. You know, I think, as you know, I've always been high on him. I do have concerns defensively, as we've discussed before, of him just basically losing a year of knowledge and defensive ability. So whoever gets him is really going to have to teach him how to play defense, especially pick and roll defense. Since he didn't do anything in college besides just stand out on the perimeter. But that, and, you know, also his shot, which once again, I think he shot the ball well, but would have liked to see it happen a little more. But I just think, you know, his talent level is so high, and at times you could really see just what a monster he was. And I think, you know, he'll be able to play in kind of this, you know, new NBA, the pace and space type game very well.
Yeah. I I think Marvin is just one of those guys who you see being like a tough matchup for anybody he really goes up against too. And do you see him more as a power forward or a center? I just kind of wanted to run that by you because I know that's been the debate with him.
I mean, definitely a power forward, but I feel like now, for the most part, any power forward is now considered a center. I could see him, you know, playing center for the majority of the part. I think he's a power forward, but now, depending on what team he is, will definitely be kind of the primary big on a lot of the teams he goes to.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right, number three.
So, I think this is right now. NBADraft.net has Jaren Jackson Jr. going to the Atlanta Hawks, but I feel like somebody is going to go and trade up and try and get Luka Doncic. Both of those guys, are, by like a lot of NBA draft Twitter, are considered like the two guys in this draft. Jackson Jr. had the highest box plus minus, has a great defensive acumen, and it is already like a pretty well proven shooter. So I just feel like Doncic, with his all around game and his potential as a scorer, as a passer, as a ball handler, I think he's the guy that, you know, anybody picking at three would be really lucky to have that guy. And that's who I take for the Atlanta Hawks or whoever chooses at the third selection.
All right. I was hoping you were going to go with somebody else so I could take him. But once again, I'll quite safe. And I don't love this pick. I'm definitely not as high on him as a lot of other people are. Jaren Jackson, who is being drafted for his upside, just due to his, as you mentioned, his length, his ability to shoot. Although I'm still a little iffy on that. I know, you know, when I first saw him play at the U17 tryouts, he could not come anywhere close to hitting a jump shot. He had the ugly form, side spin on the basketball. His shots were going all over the rim. So not even coming close at that point in time. But to his credit, you know, 1 year later, he shows up to the Hoop Summit and he still has this ugly form and ugly rotation. But all of a sudden, he's knocking down shots, and even when he's missing, it's on a straight line, which is something I always watch out for. And then he goes to college and shoots 40%. So I think he's definitely going to be one of those guys that takes a little bit longer to get there. But with his length, his outside shooting, and just his ability, I remember one play against Maryland where he came and just pounded a guy's shot and was able to catch it before it went out of bounds. So I think the upside is there. It's just going to take a little bit longer than some of the other players. But I don't love that pick, and I'm still, the jury is out on Jackson for me.
Yeah, I just remember your first impression of him wasn't necessarily like that you were blown away. I think he actually grew quite a bit like since you first saw him as well, right, Sean?
Yeah, I think at that time he might have been 6'8", 6'9".
Yeah.
So he's definitely grown. I mean, I remember thinking he might not even make the U17 team at that point, just of how he was playing. But as we've seen countless times with countless players over the last few years, of how much improvement they can make in just 1 year. So I think in that aspect, he's trending up. But, you know, I really would like to have a better feeling about him. And it's kind of similar to, not exactly similar, but Markelle Fultz was a guy last year where I kind of had a same, wasn't fully bought in on him, which is easier to say now. But at the time, you know, I watched him a lot at Top 100 and in AAU and then Hoop Summit and never really fully got on. And it's kind of a similar thing to Jaren Jackson. But I think with his length and just how important it is to find a big that can switch on the pick and roll, that he has that high upside.
Yeah.
All right, number five.
I like the pick.
I think now we might start to get a little discrepancy.
Yeah. Number five is going to be tough. Like, I feel like Dallas may be interested in one of the bigs, but at the same time, I'm hearing a lot, and you know, I think they're possibly like a team that might trade up and try and get Doncic at three, and then I've heard that the Hawks were interested in possibly trading down for Trae Young, but I know NBA Draft.net's pick right now is Michael Porter, and the rumor was that Dallas was very high on Porter as well. And I can kind of see that. So I think I'm going to take Michael Porter just for everything I was saying. Like, the guy could possibly end up being like a 20-point-per-game scorer. And, you know, with Dirk Nowitzki on the way out, you're certainly looking for like a guy to fill that power forward spot. And I think he and Harrison Barnes, I'm not sure how well it works together, but it's a possibility. And, you know, at least you have like two guys who maybe can, you know, switch on to smaller guys at times. And I feel like Dallas might take a chance there. And they already do have Dennis Smith Jr. And truly, I feel like Trae Young and Michael Porter may be a lot closer than people might think as well. So that is my selection for number five.
All right, so you went with Porter. I am going to go with Colin Sexton at number six. I'm not a huge fan of the bigs, and I'm going to go with Sexton just due to his explosiveness, athleticism, kind of mentality. And I think, you know, in that guard-dominated league, you know, I think his size is a question mark, as is his outside shooting, but I think his ability to get to the rim is something that I'm going to take over, you know, some of the other bigs or a Trae Young with his kind of outside shooting ability.
What do you think of Sexton's decision making? That's the point of contention with many.
Yeah, I mean, I not the best. I think he will be a high turnover guy. Probably, you know, him and Trae Young will be battling to see who can turn the ball over the most. But I think he's kind of, you know, he's going to be just with the athleticism, explosiveness, and, you know, kind of really has that mini Westbrook ability to kind of get to the rim. Obviously not like that, or the ability to finish as hard as Westbrook can. But I like his competitiveness, although that sometimes he can get a little out of control. But really kind of with this pick, I'm going to go with a guy with the ball in his hands over a big that a lot of people are looking at this pick.
For Orlando? Yeah, because I feel like Orlando might be leaning towards Young. But, I don't know. It could go either way. I just feel like Orlando is so desperate for shooting. But I think your vision of Sexton like is something that they could have as well.
Yeah, we'll see. So who do you have with the Bulls at seven?
At seven, I am going to stick with my board, and I'm going to take Trae Young.
All right.
And I just feel like he's a guy who is going to make a high volume of outside shots. I think once he's in the NBA and has, you know, a little bit more talent around him, it might not be forced to take all the bad shots that he did at Oklahoma. I also think he's a great passer at the very least. And I was, when I saw him live, I was very impressed with his decision making. And then throughout the year, like, you know, he just made some fantastic passes, can make shots in a number of ways as well. Good off the dribble. I am not fully sold on, like, you know, him being like the leader or like the Stephen Curry kind of player, but I just think he's going to end up being very good and a guy you just kind of want to put the ball in his hands and he could get some high level offense going. So he is who I would look at if the draft played out this way.
Okay. And, you know, it's kind of crazy. Everybody knew Trae Young in high school, and he was one of the top scorers on the EYBL playing with Michael Porter. But due to his size, he was often overlooked, wasn't in the Hoop Summit game. And by a lot of sites wasn't in their top 20, was kind of a fringe top 20 player. So he's really the first player, you know, outside of that elite group that is that made the jump his freshman year into this discussion. And with his range, with his shooting ability, his quick release, his ball handling, passing, you know, very, very high ceiling as well. I just
change of speed too. I love this change of speed. Got to the free throw line a lot.
That's the main thing with him, and got to watch that, which I was really surprised about when you Oklahoma came to LA and just dominated USC. Mm-hmm. You know, the knock on him was his athleticism and his quick burst, but he really did have that change of pace where he was getting his shoulder by the defender almost every time, and he was either getting into the middle of the lane for a floater or creating contact and getting to the line. So I think that's a very underrated skill that you brought up, and that kind of goes mm-hmm. to more how smart he is. And maybe I know he has a tendency to get a little fancy, but I do think he's a much smarter player than Sexton.
So who do you take for the Cleveland Cavaliers?
I am going with Kevin Knox.
Kevin Knox over the bigs. Kevin Knox replacing LeBron James, likely.
Well, he definitely doesn't have the ability to put the ball in the basket and to get to the rim like LeBron, but I am still high on Knox. I know, you know, really most people besides Shai Alexander-Gilgeous on Kentucky were a little underwhelming. But the main thing about Knox was he continues to get better. He's one of the younger players. You know, you could go back really 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago, he was trying out for the U16 team. Nobody knew who he was. He was more of a powerful, athletic power forward with a good 12-foot jump shot, and has really, you know, little by little gotten his ball handling better, gotten his shot better. And kind of going into college, that was the biggest question mark for me was, can he shoot over 30%? Because he had a nice form, nice release, but he would go 3-for-10, you know, 2-for-9 in a lot of the game. So for him to show a shooting display, and I know he had some big games as well, and I'm gonna go with the lanky, 6'9 wing that I think is still improving over some of the other guys.
Fair enough.
So that means
fair enough. I'm not as high on him. I kind of questioned a bit of his decision making. I thought he was a bit inconsistent, and I just feel like sometimes the shot selection leaves a lot to be desired. But a lot of that could be youth. So you raise a fair point.
I mean, I feel like he was a football player, and then he was a true power forward, and little by little has kind of been expanding to, you know, really a true wing. And you know, at each step there's growing points or things he needs to work on, and each point it seems to get a little bit better. But I'll leave you with the lucky number 9 pick in the New York Knicks, which will be, I think, one of the more interesting, along with the Bulls, of who they decide to go with.
Oh, those guys. So at number 9, I am going to take Wendell Carter from Duke. I know Mohamed Bamba is still on. I know. He's still on the board. But I feel like Carter's offense has a lot of promise. The thing I worry about with Bamba is the offensive end. I don't really trust his shooting as much as it looks like he's improved quite a bit with Drew Hanlon. And as intriguing as Bamba and Porzingis would be as just like rim protector duo, I still think Carter is very good there as well. And I think he's a very smart player and a guy I see, you know, doing good things at the NBA level because I trust his shooting more, and also his ability to finish near the hoop, and also like as a passer. And that's an area where I feel Bamba really struggles. So I feel Carter still gives you something good on the defensive end and has a little bit higher of an offensive upside. So that is why I pair him next to Porzingis.
All right. Well, you know, at this stage of the game at number 10, which I highly, highly doubt Bamba will get to.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll take him, you know, with his wingspan and shot blocking. I think he's definitely, saw him at the Sloan MIT conference a few years, and he's very, very talented player. I've always kind of questioned his maybe motor, and as well as his offensive ability. So those are my concerns with him. I think he can be a dominant shot blocker. I remember seeing him, the second year of the City of Palms, and he actually started out guarding Hamidou Diallo on the wing, which you know, for a few possessions kind of threw him off, having this 7-footer with this ridiculous wingspan guarding him before he kind of figured it out. But I think he's one of those guys that can guard the pick and roll, but offensively is the question mark, even though how long he is, and a lot of people are definitely higher on him than maybe me or you.
Yeah, I there's certainly, like, I feel like he has immense upside. But, I just worry about his offense. And he was all over the place for me at Texas this year. And, you know, he was everything you really wanted in terms of just blocking shots. But there were some other aspects of his game that I just wasn't so sure about. And as nice as he looked in workouts and, you know, it's great to see him working on his game. It'll be interesting to see just how much that translates and if you need to, like, throw out the film from Texas, which I kind of think that it's still very important. So,
yeah.
11 pick.
Yeah, why don't we we'll rattle these next five off, and then kind of how about we discuss them we'll do them pretty quick, and then we can kind of discuss. So we'll go up to the Wiz at 15.
Oh, sounds good. So at the 11th pick, I am going to take Shai Gilgeous-Alexander out of Kentucky.
All right. I like that one. I like that one a lot. And I'm going to go with Robert Williams after that. I know, once again, he's kind of had a high bust potential, just given, you know, he really only decided to show up to a few games, and those were the ones, I guess, I had a vested interest in. One, watching him in person at USC, and then when Texas A&M dominated UNC in the NCAA tournament. So, you know, it really depends on his attitude and his motor, but at this pick, the risk of somebody not, you know, turning out to what they might be is pretty high. So I'm going to go with somebody that has that kind of high potential, just with his athleticism, really good first and second leap off the ground, shot blocking, can run the floor, good agility, and I think can be a threat, at least at the beginning, from a pick and roll lob perspective. Not really going to give you much in the post, but I think his athleticism, shot blocking, and rim running can be a good thing at the 12 spot.
All right. And at the 13th spot, I'm going to take Mikal Bridges out of Villanova.
All right.
He's a guy who I think could potentially be like that 3-and-D wing. And obviously was tantamount to Villanova winning one championship, and then became one of the key players this year. And I think kind of like a consensus All-American. And I know he's a little bit like a tad old for class, like, you know, he should basically be a senior, but he would be like a really young senior. And yeah, it just seems like he might go a little bit higher than this as well. So I think him slipping to 13th would be something the Clippers would really like.
All right. I wouldn't mind skipping this pick. There's a few guys a little bit lower that I kind of like more, but I'm going to go Lonnie Walker at 14. I think, yeah, definitely did not fear him at all watching Miami. Even when watching the Loyola Chicago game, never really feared him by any means. Although the one thing that really stuck out to me was just how athletic he was. And when he got people in kind of that one-on-one situation, his first step, nobody could really stay with him. So I'm just going to go based on athleticism and upside, although I'm not a huge Lonnie Walker fan and recognize that he didn't really have the impact that, maybe a guy at this stage should in college.
Yeah,
I was going to say the all important Wizards pick for you.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is a tough one because I'm kind of between two players, but I'll go with Miles Bridges. And I'm not exactly sure where he plays. Ultimately, he probably would be best at the four, but he is definitely, even amongst like this positionless basketball, maybe a little bit small for the position. And I'm not completely sure just how well he defends, but I think offensively he's very intriguing. Always has just been a great athlete too, and seems to have a great attitude. He was a guy who at times also had maybe difficulty gaining his own shot, but you're playing with Brad Beal and John Wall. So, if the Wiz want to run, Bridges would be a great running mate for them. So I think I'm just a little bit more confident in him than a guy like Zaire Smith, who I thought was great at Texas Tech and had a very strong freshman year. But again, I'm still a little wary of him ending up being the offensive player that people seem to think he might become.
Yeah, so who is the other guy you're deciding between?
Zaire Smith from Texas Tech. Yeah.
Okay. What about Jerome Robinson, who we had many discussions as, my belief that he should have been ACC Player of the Year, but what was he ranked? I mean, a few weeks ago, I feel like he was a fringe first, mostly second rounder during the season.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think he might have even been I thought he was a probable second rounder. But, yeah, he got invited to the green room. And, so it certainly looks like some teams are pretty intrigued by him. So we will see exactly where he goes. But, yeah, I'm still not sure about just how well he translates to the NBA. I know a lot of people have concerns with his defense. But offensively, he was a great ACC player, and certainly if he wasn't ACC player of the year, he was in the discussion. And really strong season. I going back to that, I still feel unless you feel Jerome Robinson was a first team All-American. I still kind of think back to Bagley there.
The only conference player.
We don't need to rehash
that one. So give me give me three players that maybe are kind of late for 2 to 3 players and that late first round that you kind of like.
In the late first?
Yeah.
Okay, well, does 20s count as late first?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Well, Troy Brown is a guy that I have been high on for a while, and not just because I probably saw him more than any player this year in the first round conversation. But he's a guy that I feel could be a good utility player. I kind of compare him to a Sean Livingston, Evan Turner type, who could be a secondary ball handler and provide you a lot of utility. I still think there's hope for his shooting, even though he really struggled there. But he's a guy I feel has great size for the wing position, could defend maybe even 1 through 4 if you're playing small ball. And he's a guy I like quite a bit. Anybody you would think is pretty intriguing?
So I like Aaron Holiday.
Okay.
And I actually think you know, he could be somebody that is looked up as early as 15, just like his athleticism. And
yeah.
Man, he really played well this year. One player I'm intrigued by that I like, but also could see him kind of turn into like a RJ Hunter type is Chandler Hutchinson, or Hutchinson, from Boise State. So I think those two guys, as well as Kevin Herter, are, I'd say, the two or three guys I like in kind of that, you know, that 20 to 30 range.
Yeah.
I'm
kind of intrigued by.
Go ahead.
The guy I'm kind of intrigued by is D'Anthony Melton.
I
felt like he had a great overall season as a freshman, and he certainly seemed to break a lot of draft models just with like what he was able to do like across the board. You would have liked to have seen what he could do this season, but there certainly seems to be something to build with where he could be a great utility guard. And then another guy I'm very intrigued by too is Josh Okogie. I think he has a great body and a lot of defensive potential and showed some shooting potential as well. So those would probably be my three guys. And then one other guy actually is Anfernee Simons. Because you usually don't see a guy shoot like, score at his volume and then shoot as well as he did. And granted, it was in the Under Armour League, but he still shot like over 40% from three on a pretty good sample size. So, and just seems to be able to get his own offense. So, yeah, that's the guy I'm also intrigued by. So those are a few guys, if you're drafting late in the first round, who might be pretty decent picks.
Okay. Two other quick questions for you. Who, last year we saw Josh Hart and a few other seniors that kind of snuck into the late first round that I think most of the mock drafts had going in the second. So is there anybody that you could see just kind of sliding in that is in that kind of a similar vein as those guys?
I think Keita Bates-Jump could possibly do that. At least we have him in the second right now. And he was a guy I wasn't really blown away with when I saw him here for PK80, but just played really well during the year and was a guy I started to like quite a bit more. And I'm going to say Jalen Brunson, too. I think there could be a team at the end of the first round who likes him as a backup point guard. And, at least at the combine, like he was maybe a little bit did a little bit better in athleticism testing than one would have thought, and obviously has a great mind for the game. Was a big leader for the Villanova team this year, and he could be a guy I think that gets drafted in the last few picks of the first round.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go with those two, Diop and Brunson. I think Brunson definitely gets taken in the late first, given his workouts. One of the last things, I just want you to kind of maybe pick one or two second round guys that you think does have the potential. One guy, Trayvon Duval, who, as I said many times, had the ugliest shot in college basketball, but it's kind of funny. I have a lot the three kind of main recruiting rankings pulled up from last year, and one, none of them have DeAndre Ayton is three at the highest in all of them. But you won't get out of the top six without seeing Trayvon Duval's name, and now he's kind of in the mid second. So, I think with his athleticism, and maybe he goes to a team that teaches him how to shoot a little better, that I think he could definitely be a potential steal in the second round. One other guy, or let's see, Malik Newman, just as kind of like a hot scorer off the bench. And then, I could see Justin Jackson from Maryland, turning into kind of a good utility player down the road. But it'll be definitely interesting to see who goes in the second round. I could see, Theo Pinson getting drafted at some point, or I think a lot of players, kind of the draft and stash, or a lot of the international players that nobody's ever heard of. So I think that round will definitely be intriguing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, Trayvon Duval was somebody I was always very high on until I saw him like actually have to shoot. And at the Hoop Summit, I was just like, what's going on there? But again, like in the scouting cliche section, but this one rings pretty true. It's easier to teach somebody to shoot than to handle the basketball. And Trayvon has always had a really nice handle, always has had an ability to get to the basket. So yeah, there's definitely a chance he could, you know, play himself into having a decent stint in the NBA. One guy, again, this is somebody who is kind of in the high risk, high reward, Jared Vanderbilt. And just didn't really get much of a chance to show his stuff at Kentucky. Really struggled on offense at times, but always brought a great energy. Has that ability to handle the ball that you don't see too often in a guy who's 6'9" or so. And he was a great rebounding percentage as well. And, you know, has the potential to be a decent defender, something that he always kind of was his calling card also. I always say there's no real like MVP of the Hoop Summit, but if there was an MVP of the Hoop Summit, then he would have been it for the 2017 year. He had a better game than even Michael Porter. And yeah, he's a guy that I think could end up being a possible steal, just in that he can turn into a pretty good role player. Raleigh Alkins is another guy who I think might be a decent value pick if you get him pretty low. I've always liked the way he plays defense. When Arizona played against us, he was like always a guy that really stood out. And he was at times like Adidas Nations in 2015 and 2016, he was really damn good, and certainly has like some of the physical dimensions that you look for in a shooting guard, and is quite strong. So he's a guy that I think could end up being pretty decent also.
Yeah, well, definitely looking forward to the process. It's so crazy that it's already the NBA draft. To me, it feels early. You know, I feel like
yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah, I guess it is early. It's usually like the 27th-ish, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You feel like it's later June than it is, okay, but I guess it must have worked out in a weird way.
I feel a lot of the teams had a lot less workouts than they normally do. You know, some like Denver, Utah had a lot, but other teams, you only read about having kind of 4 or 5 workouts. I feel like it came up quickly, and, you know, it's kind of crazy. I was just looking back through, you know, one of the articles I wrote. I mean, this was 2014. It was the first opening day of the Peach Jam, and I was kind of straddling two courts the first game. So I had Jason Tatum, who was a rising junior, dominating up on the 17 level, playing on the right side. And then the left side was DeAndre Ayton. He was a rising sophomore playing in the 16s, and he was going up against Wendell Carter. So,
wow.
You know, definitely kind of a fun day and event to that. I remember hopping over to another gym after that and watching Malik Beasley and then Henry Ellenson. So it's kind of crazy that, you know, the 4 years has flown by, but not too crazy that when you first saw DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley, it wasn't too hard to predict that they would be going this high in the draft. So Thanks again for coming on. And we've been talking about you coming on for a while, so wish we could have had a few more leading up to this, but as always, enjoy the discussion, and hope everybody can check out the article you did on NBADraft.net.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter, NBADraftMikeyB. My top 5 list is on NBADraft.net's front page right now. And if you want to shoot me an email, my email is MikeyB@NBADraft.net. And thanks as always for having me on, Sean. It was great talking about the draft with you and getting your outlook on some of these things.
All right. Well, I know you have a few more podcasts to do before the draft. So once again, thanks for coming on, and Thanks to everybody for listening. We'll be taking another little hiatus into the July recruiting period. But for everybody that's listening, appreciate it and looking forward to talking to you guys soon.